Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. I've been using mine to make homemade hard seltzers. Regular listeners will know that my tap does chilled sparkling water like I'm some sort of king. I go to my tap, I turn it, and bubbles come out in my filtered chilled water. Amazing. Then what I do is I mix it with vodka and lemon juice to produce my own hard seltzer. I am bang on trend. That's what I am. Anyway, for more information on Cooker Taps, go to cooker.co.uk, Q-U-O-O-K-E-R, Cooker. Let's pronounce that because it's Dutch. Before we get stuck into today's podcast, if you want to contact me, you can do so by going to Twitter at Tim Lovejoy or contact me at lovejoyhour@gmail.com. If you do contact me via Twitter, I'm not one of those mental celebrities who live on social media thinking the world needs to know their opinions. So I can't guarantee that I'll read it. I can't guarantee that I'll get back to you. I try and have a life outside this job. Though, you know, I'm on there quite a bit. So message me and hopefully I'll see it. Anyway, today's hour is 15 questions to Dick and Dom. They've been together for 25 years doing shows like Dick and Dom in the Bungalow and Legends of Dick and Dom. I absolutely love Legends of Dick and Dom. Great show. Last weekend, they were busy doing festivals. They DJ. They're always fun to speak to. Here's Dick and Dom. Welcome, Dick. Welcome, Dom. How are you both?
Hi, Tim. Very well, thanks. Yeah, older, fatter.
I saw you both DJing at the... I saw you both DJing at the weekend on social media. That looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be back actually DJing again. We totally underestimated how much we missed it and how much we love doing it. And I think that not only were we fueled to come back and do it, but the people in the crowd were fueled to be watching it as well. There was just this energy that just was happening in the different festivals. So it was good to be back.
We get all the kids, you see, that used to watch Dick and Dom in a Bungalow back in the day, who are now all between like 20 and 35, and they just go mental for it. Because I think anything from your childhood, it sticks in your mind, it has a real impact on you. So they just go bonkers when they see us. It's bizarre.
It'd be a bit like you, Tim, watching Philip Schofield dropping some hard house.
I was looking at the clips, actually, and as well as dance music, you drop in Nirvana and all sorts of things. How do you work out what to play and how do you juggle between the two of you? Which one's DJing at what time?
Well, yeah, it's a complete eclectic set. We've just got a bit of everything on there and we kind of build it up from a bit of indie, old school indie. Then we kind of throw in some drum and bass in the middle. We even have a few Christmas songs, you know, in the middle of the summer. Always works a treat. How do we work out who's doing it, Dom? I think we just wing it, don't we, really?
Yeah, we wing it. It depends who's most drunk. whoever's most drunk gets to the microphone and starts shouting at the crowd. And the other one who's more sober... actually does the technical stuff. But you know, it's mainly, I'd say, it's probably 70% dance music. And then we drop in the odd one. Every now and then we drop in like a little classic just to get them going.
Yeah, well, the crowd looked amazing the other day. They looked really into it. Right, before we get into these questions, it's your 25th anniversary of you two being together, isn't it? Yeah. How exactly did you two come to be together in the first place?
We met at TV Centre in the Green Tea Bar. Do you remember the Green Tea Bar? It's like kind of a social hub in the middle of BBC TV Centre.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember it.
They used to go and get a baguette. They used to have a great baguette stall there, and you get from Jane. Yeah.
And we both just moved away from home. We were only like 18, 19 years old. And we bumped into each other in the Green Tea Bar and kind of started chatting about that we'd left home, not gone to uni, etc. I'd started as a runner at Children's BBC. And Dom kind of came through a different angle doing his magic tricks. And we just started getting on really well, going out for beers. And then we just slowly became mates. And then I was in a flat share and someone moved out of the flat and Dom needed somewhere to live. So he moved in. So we ended up sharing a flat for 5 years.
And that was carnage. And that's actually where we first started DJing when we were living together on proper vinyl. But look, Tim, look at this. I know the people listening to the podcast, this will mean nothing because you can't see, but I nicked the sign of the Green Tea Bar in my office now. And that when TV Centre was decommissioned, I made sure I borrowed, I will give it back, the Green Tea Bar sign that we met under. Isn't that romantic?
Do you know, I work at TV Centre now, and it's just, yep. I mean, it's, I just love it because for me, it was always to make it, you work at TV Centre. That's where it all happened. And so every time I turn up there, I get this little buzz. And there was a stage where we were moving studios. Do you remember we used to do it above that shopping centre?
Whiteley's,
yeah. And then there was a chance we might go to, I think it was the BT studios out by Olympic Park out in Stratford.
Oh, yeah.
There was a few other options, and I was pleading with them to do TV Centre just because it's like, to me, it's proper TV there. I absolutely love it.
It's like the British Hollywood, isn't it? It's the Hollywood of the UK, or it was anyway. Oh, I suppose it's coming back again now because it's been refurnished. I remember Philip Schofield, when TV Centre closed, his line about it was the smell. It's the smell of the building that was the thing that got you. You know, it's kind of got this old fashioned 1950s smell about it that never went away.
But for us, it was a very poignant place because it was when we realised we wanted to be TV presenters. And I've heard on your podcast, Tim, that, you know, you were a similar age to us. You kind of like, what do you all want to do? And we used to go in for meetings at TV Centre. And you can remember standing outside the gates of that place, looking up at the sign and just thinking, oh, my God, I've arrived. This is it. I don't care about any other telly that's made anywhere else. It's this building on this road. And then when you got your first pass and you walk through those gates and you're an employee there, that was a big moment for both of us.
Definitely. I loved it. Right. Now let's go on to some of these questions. We'll chat as we go through. All right. First question. What's one piece of advice you'd like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life? Start with you, Dick.
Always compare yourself to people better off than you. No, don't do that. The best bit of advice I ever got, I used to write letters off to all the DJs and TV presenters, so like Philip Schofield, and I remember getting a letter back from Simon Mayo when he was working for Radio 1. And in big letter, he handwrote a 3-page letter back to me, and in big letters in the middle, he just put, "Be determined." And I remember getting that advice. And from that moment on, I always thought in my mind, okay, be determined, and just carried on being determined, and eventually got a job at Children's BBC as a runner from that kind of little nugget of advice from Simon Mayo.
Dom?
Is this general advice about life or about trying to get into TV?
Either. Whatever you want. I don't care.
Well, I've kind of got this motto that I have. It's been more useful in my later years than my earlier years, but it is relevant to anybody at any point in life. And it is, this too shall pass. And it's not kind of not really advice, but it is some words of wisdom. And basically what it's referring to is that if you ever get into any tricky point in your life and you're finding everything a bit struggly, so
is that a word?
Yes, neutral. If it's all a bit struggly and it's a small thing, so like a pet dying, or if it's quite a big thing in life that's quite hard, all you have to just keep remembering is that that will become a memory at some point and that will pass and it will be okay. So my little words of wisdom or my motto or my advice would be, this too shall pass.
Yeah, my acronym for surviving life, which the regular listeners will know, is ARM. ARM. It's not, doesn't quite work, but it's close enough because it's an actual word. And the A is accept. So whatever happens, accept it because it's happened. Then the R is take responsibility. So it really should be T, take responsibility, but I'm just going with the R.
It's fine.
Responsibility. You got to take it. It's your life. You be responsible for it. And I think a lot of people struggle with that one. And then the M is move on. And everything which happens to me, I think, accept it, take responsibility. I'll put myself in that situation, move on, whatever it is. So.
That's very good. Because there's nothing you can really do about the past. And that's another thing. And it sounds ridiculous to get to the age of 43 to realize that looking back is the worst thing that you can possibly do. Because there is, unless you're in the DeLorean, there's nothing that you can do other than learn from it. And learn from it is the best thing you can do.
But
if you keep going back and going, oh, but what if I'd done that? And why didn't I do this? And I wish I'd done that. And what would I be doing now if I'd done this? Forget it. It's happened.
Tell you what, though, it's easier said than done, isn't it? We've all been there. Not thinking about the past, should I have done this? What if? It's easier said than done not to think like that.
Well, looking back at 96, when I first started Soccer AM and you two met, you can't help but look back and go, the 90s was bloody brilliant. What a laugh. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You can look back then. That's good. That's all right.
All right. What's the best moment of your career? Start with you this time, Dom.
Best moment of our career.
If you haven't got one straight away, Dom, I was going to say, I think it's now, this point, because 25 years, you know, you kind of start looking back and go, wow, we made it to 25 years of non-stop working and being best mates. I think this is probably the highlight of our career this year to have been doing it so long.
Have you worked constantly throughout the whole time?
Yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, same as you though, Tim. You haven't stopped, have you?
No, but I've been lucky because I've had just two shows, really. I had Soccer M for 11 years and then moved on. Well, Something for the Weekend, which got dumped by the BBC. And then Sunday Brunch on Channel 4. So, yeah, I've been working for 25 years, which has been amazing. So, yeah.
I tell you what, we are often envious when we come on to Sunday Brunch that you've had the security and the consistency of work with your job, whereas we have had... It's been bizarre. We have to fight constantly every single day to stay afloat in this business. And there was a great bit of advice given to us by someone, which is it's hard to get in the business, but it's even harder to stay in the business. And that is so true. Even when you've made a name for yourself, like I suppose you could say we have, it's still really hard to keep going and keep going. And another a wise friend of ours, who's Gordon the Gopher, not the puppet, the guy that used to wrangle him, but his advice was you've got to keep moving like a shark, because if a shark stops swimming, it will die. You've got to keep moving. But I suppose for me, I'm gonna go for the more obvious point in our career, which is to win a BAFTA for your work and get the recognition from, you know, BAFTA. That's takes on beating, really.
What did you get that one for?
Which one? There's four.
Four, Jesus Christ! Four BAFTAs.
I think we've won more BAFTAs than Ian McKellen. Is that right, Dom?
Yeah.
That is very good.
Yes, we won Best Presenter twice and Best Entertainment Show twice.
I've never been anywhere close to a BAFTA. Right, listen. What's the worst moment of your career? That I imagine is that one of your shows getting not recommissioned?
Oh, I mean, we've had plenty of them, Tim. We've had a few shows not recommissioned. At the early 2000s, yeah, and the last 25 years, the highlight. I think the late 2000s was probably the hardest part in our career, mainly for me more than Dom, because I was going through a massive struggle in my life, because I lost my mum to dementia. She was really young. She was only 58. And I was only like in my early 20s doing Dick and Dom in a Bungalow at the time she got dementia. So it was a really difficult period. And then kind of when the Bungalow ended, I'd kind of gone into this very, very kind of dark place, I suppose you would say. And we ended up doing a job for Sky, which was Are You Smarter Than a 10-Year-Old? Massive game show. And we did Radio 1. But it was all, for me, it all just became too much. So, you know, the struggle kind of ended that part of our career, which was a real shame. And then we kind of went back to the safety of children's TV. So yeah, it was a difficult period. That was probably the hardest part we've had in our career. But you know,
because back then as well, sorry Rich, it was back then, because people didn't really understand mental health problems back then as well. So everyone just thought, what's Rich doing? He's making wrong decisions. Because at one point Rich just went, I'm out the industry, I'm leaving. And at which point I was like, well, what do we do? This is straight after the Bungalow as well. Yeah. So we were in a tricky position. I didn't know what to do with myself, because no one really wants half a brand. And then it was a bit tricky. And then after a while, Rich said, you know, it's after about a year or so of taking time, good time out, which is what he needed to do, said, let's go back in it again. But by then, the momentum had dropped, because if you don't do anything for a year, it's a long chunk of time.
Did you resent him during that time then? I mean, I know he's your mate and he's...
No, because I knew what was going on behind the scenes. Right. But Rich at the time was very private about it. He didn't want anyone to know about the personal struggles that he was going through with his mum and stuff. So we didn't tell anyone what was going on. So all it just looked like is that we'd done the Bungalow and just stopped working. And what it looked like is we had earned so much money that we could afford to stop. The reality was something very, very different.
It's funny. There's a great quote which is kind of that says people always see the success, they don't see the struggle. You know, because they look at you and think, oh, those two, great. They've done the business. You're smashing it. But actually, behind the scenes, you know, unless you're open about it and you're talking about it, which now, of course, on social media, everybody's talking about it. back in the late 2000s, before even social media was invented, it was something that just wasn't really discussed.
Exactly, Tim, when you came to the set of The Legend of Dick and Dom with your girls, because you guys knew Chloe, who played one of the lead roles in Legend of Dick and Dom, that was when Rich was going through his absolute worst period. So he'd come back, we'd come back to do some work, and he was doing Legend of Dick and Dom. So we were back in the game, like Rich said, we went back to kids' TV. But he was filming whilst essentially having a breakdown. It was astonishing to watch. And he did amazing. When the red light, when it would be like the clapper wall came down, they went 3, 2, 1, action. He literally switched it on, did an amazing job. He was brilliant.
You know, I think you know this, but I had depression badly, and I was doing something for the weekend at the time, and exactly the same. When the cameras went action, I could then turn it on, do my bit, and then there was only one show, and I remember it was Madness were on it, and they're one of my favorite bands. I love Suggs. I think Chaz was on it, Carl was on it, and as well. And I was just couldn't. They were being funny, and I couldn't get with the. You know when you can't quite hit it, and I was like. I can't get my words out. I can't get anywhere close to being funny with them. And I wasn't enjoying it. But apart from that, I never told anyone. I don't know if you felt the same about this, Dick, because I always thought that stage, which was, I don't know, 10 years ago or something, I thought if I tell too many people, it's easier to get rid of me. And I'm a problem. Yeah. So I shut up and just turned up and pretended I was normal.
Exactly what I did. Yeah. Sadly, I made bad decisions at the time though as well, you know. It was Roman Kemp did that documentary on BBC3. I don't know whether you saw that. And I read an interview with him, and he said he nearly didn't do the documentary because he felt, oh dear, my boss might not like this, I might get sacked for coming out about depression, etc. So you know, it's kind of still there now, even though mental health's being spoken about more, people are still shying away from opening up. I mean, this is kind of only the second time in 25 years that I've ever discussed this, you know, so It's not something I talk about still to this day.
It's weird, isn't it? The bad decisions you make. By the way, if you have got depression, don't make any major decisions whilst you're trying to get as much rest as possible before you make a major decision. I remember buying a car, and I needed a car, and I bought one. I really didn't know what I'd bought. and I didn't want to pick it up because I was too scared because I'd done it. And I don't know if you had this, Dick, but you, by the way, I'm going to keep calling you Dick, not Rich, because that's how I know you. But I don't know if you know that, have this, but everything becomes a bit fuzzy and you don't remember big parts of your life because it's all kind of traumatic. I'd remembered buying the car, but I didn't remember really what I'd got. And eventually, after about 2 weeks, the guy at the garage said, you're going to come and pick this car up. It's really cool. You know, it's like I got there and it was a really lovely car. And I thought, I was all right with it, but it
did. In lockdown, I've actually done a lot of reflecting on it. And I was looking back at it and just thinking how I was then and, you know, how unwell I was really. And you kind of just put your head in your hands and go, I can't believe that I was like that. And I was making those decisions, you know. It's like it wasn't me, you know.
But the thing is, the thing that was interesting at the time is that people thought Rich was just being rude because he didn't used to speak to anyone. He didn't used to pick up his phone to anyone. So we were going for meetings. And I don't know if you did the same with depression, is that you were going for a meeting and Rich would sit next to me and not speak. Mm. But they thought he was being rude. But the reality is he couldn't cope with being in that situation. And his mind was thinking about a million and one other things other than what was... And you know what those meetings are like. Usually they're just full of bullshit anyway. So.
Oh my God, the amount of meetings I've had, which I've thought, why did I have that? What was the point in that?
We stopped doing them. We're like, you know where we are. If you want to have a development meeting, just don't worry about it. Just let us know when it's commissioned.
Talking about commissions, when I came to see Legend of Dick and Dom, I love that show, by the way. I thought you two were great in it. I thought the writing was great. All the actors were fantastic. Why didn't that carry on? Was there a reason they decided to get rid of that in the end? Was it too expensive?
Again, Horrible Histories was the reason I think it ultimately didn't do as well as it could have done. I think it was such a good show, Horrible Histories. And it just tapped into the educational element as well. Really well acted, great team behind it. And I think, you know, to have two historical, you know, dramatized comedies on at the same time
Right.
You're going to lose the race against them, really.
And also, you know, commissioners change. You know, we've been through, I don't know how many commissioners we went through at CBBC, Don. Was it about 10 in the end or something?
Yeah.
Every 3 or 4 years, a commissioner changes. And it's those people who can make those massive life-changing decisions for us. And I think at the time, after the third series of The Legend, there was a commissioner change, and they commissioned Horrible Histories and decommissioned Legend of Dick and Dom. You know, it's right. As simple as that. One person can change your whole kind of direction.
We had that on Sunday brunch. Once new commissioner, we'd been offered a 2-year contract, came in, immediately said no, only 1 year, and we thought, oh, here we go, we're out here. But then they eventually look at the ratings and think, we'll keep this one. we'll keep this one going for the timing. But the thing is, that is I talk about this the whole time. It's a real problem with TV, where if you're online or doing something like this podcast or anything, no one can get rid of this. Whereas on TV, there's gatekeepers, aren't there? And the gatekeepers, in my career, it seems that there used to be one gatekeeper and then the channel boss. Now there's a gatekeeper, an assistant gatekeeper, an assistant assistant gatekeeper. There's these commissioning editors all the way down.
Oh, I know.
And there's a lot of them there. And so something which is quite strange, like, I don't know, say Dick and Dom and the Bungalow. Why did that? And do you know why that ended in the end?
That was our decision. Mm. I think, you know, it was we took it as far as we think we could, and we could have done more. We were off another 2 series. Mm. And the BBC were desperate for us to carry on because we were killing the ratings in a good way. I mean, doing a good way in the ratings. And we just thought we could carry on and it might fade, or we can just stop now and leave the audience wanting more. So that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, I think it was
the right. I'm glad we did, I think.
It was the right decision at the time. Also, though, I think if we had gone on to a further 2 series, we would have found the problems you were just saying, Tim, starting to appear, because we were kind of let loose. We were allowed to do what we wanted because they knew it was pulling in the ratings. And it was a great show and great fun. So the producer was kind of just, yeah, off you go. It's a blank page. Do what you want. But I think by 2006, 2007, 2008, things were starting to clamp down slowly. You know, we've kind of moved on from there now to even, yeah, the rule book is like kind of million pages long, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we were worried that the past 2 executive producers were happy to just sit at the back of the gallery and watch the circus unfold. But all it would have taken is one person to say, I don't like fart jokes or bogeys. And then where do you go from there with that show?
Yeah, that was the luckiest thing I had about Soccer AM, is it was a sports channel. So my bosses didn't really give a shit about what I was doing. I was doing entertainment and they were like, as long as the ratings come in, we don't care. And when I moved to real TV, suddenly when I realized there's so many layers and there's lawyers and there's so many different people who get stuck into a TV show. Whereas on Soccer AM, every now and then I get a call from the lawyers going, what did you do on Saturday? I was like,
Tim, what do you prefer more? Do you prefer TV or radio?
TV. Because it was always my love doing it. But the thing about radio is it's a media. I like live TV. That's what I love doing, live TV. But I do like doing radio too. It's just, it's a lot more work, whereas TV is. What I'm really glad about is I've got a 3-hour show. If that was a 1-hour show, I think I'd be really unsatisfied. But 3 hours, you know, that's what you want, isn't it? How long was Dick the Bungalow?
I think that was 3 hours, wasn't it? Yeah, nine till 12. Yeah.
Cartoons in the middle of it, but essentially it was the same. Then we used to pre-record the Sunday show as well. But again, we didn't really do anything. We turned up on a Friday afternoon to do a stagger through, and it really was a stagger through. We were just kind of mumbling around, didn't really pay attention, and then just turned up on Saturday morning, just went for it. And we had, you know, we had someone behind the camera holding up a little whiteboard with kind of a loose running order. So we just glance at the running order and just carry on like that. But there was no rehearsals.
Kids TV was mad, wasn't it then? I mean, Soccer AM was on at the same time that all you lot were doing your stuff. Yeah. But it was absolutely, there was Ant and Dec and you guys came along. There was Sam and Mark. Yeah. All three of the shows were fantastic. Before that, there was a whole, you know, there's a whole legend of television shows before that. The Saturday morning thing was just people messing about, wasn't it? That was the key to it.
Yeah. Shame it doesn't exist now, really.
But again, it's what we said before. The people who make these decisions, whoever they may be, have decided that people don't want to watch Saturday morning television anymore for some reason. Mm. I don't know. Mm. I mean, we understand that kids don't really watch kids' TV as much these days because they're all watching it on, you know, YouTube or whatever, or TikTok. But I think a Saturday morning show specifically would still work in this generation. You know, I think that's kind of a time period on a weekend that still would work. So I'm not sure why it's not there anymore. It's all cooking shows now, isn't it?
It is. Bloody
cooking shows. Like is, silly man.
Rubbish cooking shows.
Yeah. You didn't think about that before you said it, did you?
No, but yours is on a Sunday anyway, too. So I was talking about Saturday.
No, you've done it now. You said it.
I always think the cooking's like, you know, it's there to complement the crap I have to do. Right. What does success mean to you?
Wow.
Happiness. Yeah,
the most successful and in inverted commas richest people I know have nothing and are really, really happy. So success, I would say, is happiness.
Do you know, I follow you on social media, you lot, and the thing that I think makes you look happiest, Dom, is when you've got a hammer in your hand and you're building something or making something. You look like pig in shit when you're doing that.
I've just had a DIY alcove company drop off an alcove cabinet that I'm going to install. So yeah, and I literally vibe off it. I love it. So instead of paying someone like loads of money to come and do the whole job for you, they essentially deliver it as flat pack, and then I put it all together either side of the fireplace and make it, you know, paint it.
Look behind him there, Tim. He's just got a tortoise, and you can see he actually built the tortoise's house.
Yeah, that's not hard to build. That's easy.
When is this? When he did his staircase the other day, he did the banisters and stuff. I was absolutely shocked. I was blown away, mate. That's... Yeah.
Well, it's been. It all happened. I've always been handy, and I've always did loads of woodwork and DT at home. We had a workshop at home, and I was always in there as a kid. And then my father-in-law, Tommy, he was a builder. So he used to take me around to various jobs that he was doing and teach me. And then I bought this house under lockdown. And then all of our work disappeared. And this was a probate house. So it was literally knackered. It was almost unlivable. Well, it was unlivable. And so because we lost all our work, I couldn't really pay anyone to do any trade for me. And so I thought, well, what the hell am I going to do? So I went out to teach myself. So I literally hit YouTube, did some deals with some tool companies, got some tools, and just got to work myself. And I thought, if I have to do it myself, then that's what I'm going to do. So I've done things like installing all the shutters in the house, hanging doors, all the paneling around the house, installing staircases. It's doing landscaping. It's been interesting.
And you're coming around to do. You're coming around to start on mine next month, aren't you, Dom?
What do you need doing? I think the house is in good shape, isn't it? It
needs a bit of liquor paint here and there.
The thing is, you can't use the drill because you wake your baby.
Oh yeah.
Have you ever heard of that guy, Money Moustache guy? Have you heard of him? It's like a website or something. It's a bloke, and he teaches you how to retire young. And he teaches you how to invest your money, retire young. And then it's basically you have to then become self-sufficient. But I think one of his shticks is that you've not really lived until you've built your own house. but with their own hands, basically. And that's what you've done. So you've lived more than us, but you're more successful.
It's been good fun. There's some jobs I won't do. So I won't do electrics because that will go wrong.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Right, let's get on to the next question, which is, what is your outstanding fashion moment? I'd like to know if you've ever had conversations about what you're going to wear on TV shows and when you're out DJing and everything else too.
I don't think I've had any good fashion moments. Have you, Dom?
I think
bad ones.
Crown and glory of fashion moments was trying to get into TV and trying to look like Chris Evans and wearing tartan trousers all the time.
Do you know what? I got to say, I worked at Planet 24. I was a researcher and then a producer on The Big Breakfast. And walking around Planet 24, which is the production company, they also made The Word and stuff like that. I cannot tell you how many people turned up in tartan trousers, green jumpers. anyone with ginger hair wanted to get a job there. It was just like there was a million Chris Evans lookalikes there, which is fantastic.
Definitely tartan trousers. In fact, Tim, I can't remember whether we've ever talked about this before, but I went home to see my mum about a year ago, and I've seen her since as well, but this happened a year ago, and I found my old pad of paper that I used to keep by the phone with all my contacts and people I've phoned people to re-get in contact, and your name was in there. I'd spoken to you on the phone when I was trying to get into telly, and I think you had viewed my showreel, and the note was, it's quite good, yeah, this is good.
And oh, did I reply to you?
Yeah, I think we spoke on the phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
do you know what? I had a file of 250 letters. I've still got it at my parents' house, of rejection letters. And, and I used to write a letter a day, and I used to get one back every day going, "You're crap," or, I mean, standard rubbish. Yeah. And I always thought, if someone just, like Peter Powell once just said to me, you know, "You well done for keep trying, maybe get a job behind the camera." And but just that, I mean, I took that as, he thinks I'm great, I just need to get some more experience behind the camera. But the thing is, just him replying once meant so much to me. So I used to reply to everyone all the time, or try to, if they put effort into it.
Yeah, that's when you were at the Big Breakfast. But I remember getting a similar letter. Well, Rich is the same. We used to be the same as you, Tim. So we used to send off the padded envelope with the VHS cassette tape in it and a hand-typed letter with your headed paper on it and a biog stapled to it, 4 first-class stamps on the corner, chuck it in the post and get them back every day. They used to send the tapes back to you, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
With the rejection letter.
With the rejection letter. I remember getting one from James Grant Management that was Peter Powell's management company. It still exists in a different form. And I'm from a member of their staff. And I can remember highlighting in different colours, different words and different sentences, and dissecting that advice so well. And then, you know, applying it.
Yeah, I think because being producer of Soccer M, I used to get sent a lot. And I think in the old days when it was VHSs, it was a lot easier just to, because I'd had a VHS on my table, I could stick it in, watch it, and then try and reply somehow. When things became more digital, you just get inundated then because it's too easy. What you had to do was hard, or what I had to do was make VHSs, stick them in envelopes, write a covering letter, go to a post office, when you could just do it on email. And suddenly it went from like one a week to, you know, 10 a day of people going, "What do you think of me? Here's my digital link to something." And then it becomes too hard to reply to everyone. Oh, yeah.
And of course, now we've all got smartphones, literally anybody can be a presenter.
Yeah, they can. And
social media.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay. Tell our listeners something that has been life-changing for you. Is there anything you can think of?
I think we kind of already touched on it, didn't we, Dom? All the stuff I was saying, that was kind of the...
Life-changing. Well, there's the obvious one, which is having children. That changes a lot, doesn't it? Never experienced exhaustion like it. And my kids are 13 and 11, but it's still utterly exhausting. Of course, rewarding. We all know that bit. But it certainly makes just life more kind of... you're making it up as you go along because you don't actually know the answers to what you're doing. There's no rule book. No one can actually tell you what to do. And so you have to kind of blag it a lot of the way. So that's definitely been life changing in a very good way.
I've just had a little one about 7 weeks ago. So I'm right in the start of all this. And it's definitely life changing.
how does it feel? Does it feel... how has it made it? What I was overwhelmed when I had my children to begin
with. Elation of the birth is something it's a one-off life experience. It's depending on how many kids you are, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, I was in pieces. It's when you actually bring it home from the hospital, sit it down in the lounge and look at it and go, now what? Because you've now got to look after another human being for the rest of its life. And till you die, obviously. It's mind-blowing in that respect.
Those two little girls that I brought to see you on The Legend of Dick and Dom, to film there, are now 19. And I put in all that work and all that effort, and now they barely speak to me if I'm lucky. And you just think, I put a lot of work into you two. Can I have something back now? Just to, like, every now and then ask me how I am. And all I do is every now and then I get a text going, "Oh, you've got Joy Crooks on your show. That's amazing. She's great." And I was like, "What about me?" I never care about me. So, yeah.
Well, what age do kids get to where they start appreciating the parents again? Is it kind of mid, late 20s?
No, it's when they become parents.
Oh, is it that long?
So you become a parent, then you go, I get it. I get how much shit you have to deal with.
All right, next question. What's your relationship with social media like?
It's not bad, is it, Dom? I think it's some days it's good, some days it's bad. Some days I literally can find myself sitting there for maybe an hour and a half just flicking the phone, looking at all this.
Hang on a minute. Let's do it now. Go to your screen time. Let's have a look what we did over the weekend. You ready?
All right, hold on.
And then we'll, because you'll be able to see how much he spent on social media, yeah? So let me just put in. Is it called Screen Time?
Yeah, yeah. Screen Time.
Okay, Screen Time. So
I look at mine. I don't want to look at mine. I'm a bit...
Go on, Tim. What's your daily average?
I can't find mine at the moment. Hold on.
Oh, I've gone down 10% from last week.
You were?
Screen Time.
Oh, yeah, mine's not coming up either. Hold on.
Daily average is 4 hours. That's not good, is it?
I think that's all right, actually. I think you'll find that's actually all right. That's for all screens. That's checking emails. That's WhatsApp. Running apps. It's, you know, sat nav. That's everything. But my daily average is, 3 hours 50.
Oh, no, I've lost. Mine's 5 hours. Mine's 5 hours 33.
Yeah. I've got a real bad addiction with social media though. I can't resist picking it up and looking at it. And I've been watching Tarantino movies again recently. I listened to them. I'm on a podcast. So I decided to listen to them, and I have to put the phone in another room. Otherwise, I keep going to it. During the Olympics and during football matches, I have to put it in another room now. Otherwise, I end up going to my bloody Twitter and watching that. Yeah.
When I was saying good and bad, bad days are like what you just said, Tim, but I try to have good days where I literally do have to put the phone over the other side of the room and just go, no, I've got to do something productive now, not just sit looking at that all day long, you know?
Did you used to smoke, Tim?
I did years ago.
Yeah, so we used to smoke years ago as well. And when you run out of fag, your last fag that's gone, that panic that you feel is the same as when your battery dies. When your battery dies on your phone, you literally can feel this sense of anxiety creeping through your body. Or if you walk out of the house and you don't feel balanced on one side, you know you've forgotten your phone in your pocket.
So someone's calling the smartphones the new smoking. I read it the other day online, and it's because smoking just fills up gaps in your life, doesn't it? I'm a bit bored, I'll have a cigarette. Do you remember? That's kind of probably, as well as looking cool, that's probably why you started. And then, and it's the same with the phone. I'm a bit bored. Let's go onto the mobile phone and see what's happening. So do you feel, I was just saying in the intro, actually, I'm not one of these celebrities who spends all my time looking on there living my life through Twitter. I just don't want to do that or Instagram. So I do take time off, but I have to force myself to do it. Do you feel that you should be doing philosophical message or like social messages to your listeners and stuff? Do you feel that's your place?
I think they just want to see us shouting bogeys, and that's about it, really. They want to see the fun stuff, I think. Every now and then, very, very rarely, once every year, we'll put something of some worth. But generally, we leave all that to people who are experienced in those areas. For example, last year, I went for I think it was during lockdown. My mind was starting to slip into a bad way of thinking. I thought, right, let's go for some more runs, do more running. I love running. So I went around one morning, the sun was coming up. I had deer in the park around me, and I was like, I felt elated. And I just thought, I've got to pass this on to people just in case they're having a difficult time. So I just said, you've got to take it from me that if you're having a really bad time, if you can try and get out of the house and try and have even a tiny little jog for 10 minutes, I'm not saying you should do what I did and have an hour's run around a park, just try and do something. You will feel better and more grateful when you get back than if you just sit there at home going into a dark place. So there's small moments like that where you feel like you can impart what you're feeling and help others. But in terms of sending loads of memes from the Dalai Lama.
You can never win with it though, because even if just looking at it, whatever, but if you're not doing it, you feel anxious. You kind of go, I'm not doing enough social, I'm not posting enough, you know. So you get anxious about, oh, what should I do? I'll take a photo of my dinner and I'll put it on Instagram, you know. It's just
I have to bully Rich quite a lot to posting stuff, because I'll always fart around like doing some DIY and filming all that kind of stuff, and I have to say, Rich, you've got to start posting more. You're like the quiet one in the back, but you've got to start posting more. So then he'll take a picture of his dinner and put it.
but for a while you started doing, like, you were actually producing material for it was Instagram, basically. I was watching you on, and I've seen a lot of people do this, Vic and Bob do it and stuff like that, and I think it's really valuable. it's great viewing, but it's not valuable because you don't make any money out of it. That's the fundamental problem. Mm-hmm. And Bob Mortimer did a lot with his Train Man and stuff like that. That seems to have died down. I think, probably because there's no money in it. You have to motivate yourself. Is that how you feel?
That we did. Well, that happened to us, didn't it, Rich?
100%.
We were doing the Dick and Dom daily debrief during lockdown. And we'd sit in each other's houses and we'd talk for half an hour about what we'd been up to for the day. And it started great. We were chatting away. We'd do silly things. People would love it. They would join in. And we'd just talk to each other about stupid minutiae stuff that we had done. Today, I bought some sesame oil. Today, I've cleaned out my fridge. I bought a tortoise. All that kind of stuff. But then, like you said, we just went, not in any money. Sorry. Can't be asked.
Stop that.
I keep having this whole dilemma with this podcast. Is like it's not a massive earner. You know, a cooker throw me a few quid, which is lovely. I love the people at Cooker. But I keep saying, is it worth me carrying on? But I love doing it. And because I don't know if you know, but as well as doing the celebrities like you, I also do stuff that interests me. So I talked to a professor of immunology last week and things like that. So I'm always trying to find out stuff. He's a high profile personal trainer who's telling me all about calorie counting the other day as well. So I get to learn all this stuff that I'm really interested in. So I do keep doing it, but it is one of those things. It's tough to keep motivating yourself every week if there's not financial gain or you're not learning out of it, isn't it?
Or if you feel a bit old for it as well. I think that's another thing, is that our various management have said to us, you've got to get into TikTok, get into TikTok, you've got to get into TikTok. Why? Everyone's doing TikTok, get into TikTok. But again, our reply is usually the same, which is can't be asked. It just can't be asked.
TikTok is so dangerous.
Oh, it is.
You want it?
No, I'm not on it. I put it on my phone, and 6 hours later, I realized I probably spent 4 hours just going watching someone dance, another person dance. And I thought, this is so addictive because it's such a brilliant thing. Yeah. I mean, it is brilliant, but you don't need it in your life. But when you get it in your life, it is brilliant going through it. So I just got rid of it and thought, I'm not ever going on that. I'm not touching it. So
I had to take it off my kids' phones. I had to delete it off my kids' phones because they were just going to this TikTok hole. Where they were literally just sat, they would assume this kind of weird hunched position and just be doing this on the sofa. And I just thought, this is not how to live your life. And I'm a parent. I need to let you know that what's happening here, what I can see, is essentially wrong.
Me and Don were talking the other day, Tim. Where do you think it's going to go, all this? Will it just keep going forever? You know, this social media thing, you know, TikTok, Insta.
I don't know, but parenting advice for you is to keep technology away from your daughter for as long as possible. My 8-year-old, I won't let her have anything. She has it at her mum's actually, but she never has any at mine. Mm. And I just won't let her do it because I just want her. She goes, should we paint and do some art? And even though it's harder for me, it's like Jesus, just trying to get them to that level where they don't want to go on their phone or iPad. And I think phones and iPads are brilliant, by the way, but it's just trying to give them a break from it. The teenagers, my 19-year-olds, I mean, they used to just be in, they'll hate me for saying this, but they never stop reading all the time, read, read, read. But now the phone stops them even doing the thing they love the most, which is,
I don't know. Yeah.
But it's for me, I'm addicted as well. So I can see it. I'm so addicted to that thing.
Yep.
It's sad because you can see a lot of new parents now, when their toddler wakes them up early in the morning, they literally just throw them an iPad or throw them a phone. And I think that's so sad. I have really happy memories and no regrets about waking up with Tommy and Sam at like 4 o'clock in the morning and playing, setting up your Duplo blocks or your, what's the wooden train sets called? Train sets. Mm-hmm. And playing for hours. And I think it's really sad that, you know, you can chuck a toddler a phone just so you can get another hour in bed.
Though I must say, we don't know what's going on in people's minds, and there's a lot of people out there feeling very sad, and it's like, you know, it's kids can get on top of you, can't they? So it's a release, I suppose.
We always thought, I think there's probably a market for if Apple launched something called like the iPhone Clear, and it still looks nice, but there's literally just phone call, contacts, and text. And that's it. I'm pretty sure a lot of people would use it. And also in the same way that doctors years ago used to say, smoke, it's good for you. There used to be posters in town saying, my doctor says smoking is good for you. I'm pretty sure in maybe 10 years or less time, there's going to be substantial information that this is depleting your mental health.
They've already proved that it makes kids depressed. So I've listened to that on a podcast recently. But I did buy one of those phones. It's called my mates take the mickey out of me because I had to get it from America, and it's called a light phone. Right, you look it up, and it doesn't do anything on it. It just does enough. It won't take you online. You can listen to podcasts on it. So there's a few functions on it, and I got it, and I was having a curry with my mates, and they were laughing at me, going, "Can't you just control yourself?" I said, "Well, I can't." So I've got this thing called a life phone, and I said, "Look, I know it's not going to work, but I'm going to give it a go." Anyway, I had it for a day. I probably used it for 2 days, and I've never used it again. And they said, "Why don't you use that?" I said, "Because it's got none of the stuff I like on it."
Oh, no. Oh, ouch.
That's like someone saying, "I've quit booze and just taking it up, opening a chin."
But the thing is, right, my mates, they laugh at me so much because we all knew it wasn't going to work. And the other thing about it, what you don't realize with smartphones is they work so well. And these other phones, they're just not, you know, you press a button and it takes more than a second for the thing to work. You're like, "I'm out." The iPhone just works, bam, 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 bam. And, you know, all the smartphones do. It's like, I was just such, but you're right. If iPhone did do this thing, I think they might get some business out of it. You just need to be able to get an Uber on it or whatever.
Yeah. I think what we've just confirmed then is we're all screwed, to be honest.
The end is
night. I do think we are. I've said this on this podcast before, so I'll bore some of my regulars, but I do think we're coming to the next period of our evolution where we're slowly turning into our machines. And I do think it's like a zombie film. We can't resist it. And the really clever ones are the ones who are sitting out in the woods doing yoga and going, "Like, I'm out. I'm out of this." Whereas the rest of us are going, "Come on, give me some more technology. I want more social media." And we're slowly, like, my phone means I've got more information. I'm wiser than the wisest person in 1950 something, in the world, because I've got more. I've got everything. I've got a compass on it. I mean, I never use the compass on it, but I've got literally every sodding thing on that phone, and I can't. It's soon going to be actually in my head, isn't it? We're not that far away from that shit. I mean, Elon Musk is doing the brain lace or whatever it's called, and so we're going to have it into. And I think that's the next evolution for us, is we're going to start turning ourselves into half human, half code.
Well, I think you're right. Do you remember years ago when all we had an iPhone for was drinking a virtual pint? Do you remember the kind of used to drink a pint like that?
Or
pretend it was a shaver. It goes,
right.
They were the good apps.
Essential.
Or even, can we talk about it, life before it was even invented? What did we used to do in the 90s?
Get drunk.
Drink. Drink. We used to drink and laugh a lot.
I'm addicted to backgammon on my phone as well, and I like playing backgammon, so I just play that constantly. So I keep convincing myself it's teaching me life lessons, but I don't think it is. I just think I like playing backgammon.
Do you do that thing? I think Michael McIntyre did a sketch about it. It was at night time. You're scrolling through stuff laying down, and then you know when you finish because you fall asleep and it just lands on your head.
I try not to take it to bed with me, but then I do sometimes like listening to a podcast late at night. God, terrible. Right, let me go on to another question. I'm gonna hit you my favorite question, because I don't wanna run out of time before we get to this one. Have you ever seen a ghost or a UFO?
No.
Can you say it's a UFO? I don't know what it was.
Then it's a UFO.
But I thought I was the only person that saw it. Then when I asked my mate, "Did you just?" He said, "Yeah." What it was, we were laid. Now, it might have been real. I might have been seeing things, because I was at a festival in my 20s at the time. So there's every chance it might have not happened. But I was laid down. We'd only just arrived, so the festival hadn't started. WOMAD Festival. Laid down, staring at the stars. And I saw about four really, really bright stars. And I was sure that they were kind of moving around a bit. I was like, "My God, they look like they're moving." And suddenly they did this thing where they moved around a little bit more and then sped off in different directions. And I went, "Oh, my God, I've just seen something amazing." I said, "Charlie, did you see it?" He went, "Did you see those lights just spin off in different directions really high in the sky?" I went, "Yeah." And I have tried thinking and done a little bit of research as to what it could be, and I can't find any solution to what that is. Because they literally flew off so fast in different directions.
Too early for a drone, are you saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, way too early. Yeah. I was in my 20s. So this was 23, 24 years ago.
What I don't get, right, and so everyone takes the mickey out of me on Sunday brunch because I talk about it constantly. And I've got a WhatsApp group with some friends who really talk about this a lot, right? I can't believe in aliens visiting us because I've got no evidence to back it up. However, Barack Obama, about maybe 4 weeks ago, said on, it was James Corden's show, actually, he said, there are definitely UFOs, unidentified flying objects. They move rapidly and we have no idea what they are. But I can't say they're aliens, right? So he said this, and I would, thought, why isn't that front page news? Well, it's the ex-president of the United States of America. So I've been badgering Sunday Brunch, let's get alien experts on the show to talk to us about UFOs and what they can be. The Pentagon's released loads of footage from their pilots saying we've seen stuff, and it doesn't move like any drone yet, and it doesn't move like a bird, it doesn't move like a plane. Unless it's, and they keep saying that if it's Russia or China in their airspace, they need to do something about it because they don't know what it is. But this is, it just doesn't seem to be making the news. And I'm like, how is this not making the news? And me and all my mates are texting each other all the time going, when's the alien invasion? Fucking hell, bring it on. Come on.
Yeah. I think most of those images that you see of people stood around an alien corpse and, you know, that have leaked from that. I'm dubious about them, but I can't tell you what I saw other than what I saw. That was it. So it might have been something from another country, some war thing, or it could have been UFOs or anything. I don't know. But yeah, lots of.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason why it's not front page news. Maybe they just think our brains wouldn't be able to handle it, you know, and kind of the fear would kick in and the control would be lost.
Well, some of the intellectuals in United States of America say they've been, people like Sam Harris, for instance, who has podcasts and things, they've been contacted, so they say, to say, how are we going to break it to the public that there's things going on? And we're listening to that going, hold on, why isn't that front page news as well? It's like, what am I hearing that no one else is hearing? And I think people think UFOs is so far-fetched that even if you talk about it, you're thought of as a lunatic. So people I mean, I feel like a lunatic discussing this with you now. But I love, and I can't help myself but go online and look at all this stuff. So I was last night I was watching an American serviceman who had been abducted with 11 of his mates and taken as part of an experiment with the aliens. And he'd come back and he was telling all about it. And I'm sitting there going, oh, this is so real. This is so true. But it's probably bollocks. But I just like getting involved in it all. I don't know why, but they take the mickey out of me at Sunday brunch. So I keep telling them.
I just don't think you can comprehend really how it's possible anyway. You know, when you think about it, they would have to travel at the speed of light and faster in order to be able to get to our planet, and that they would have to be on there and probably have generations of their existence on that spacecraft as well in order to be able to get to us. I can't understand how it's actually possible for them to travel from another galaxy to here.
It's different dimensions, gravity shifting. I mean, we haven't got enough time to go into it.
Dom's not seen Interstellar, the film, so he doesn't understand all that.
you've got a documentary there anyway for Discovery.
Get on it, Tim.
I talked to Jason Donovan about this the other day on this podcast. And the thing that I think about it more than anything is if aliens do land, we're in a bit of a mess, aren't we, with our leadership? You know, what are we looking at? Biden, Boris Johnson? I mean, you know, surely we're going to have to go, hold on, guys, you're not our leader anymore. We need someone proper now to go and talk to the alien. Who on earth would we go for? I mean, we'd have to go for bloody Elon Musk or someone, wouldn't we? Who would we go for to talk to the alien?
He's probably talking to them already.
Well, yeah. I think the Russians and Chinese are. That's what they're doing. All right. What's it? I've got a couple more questions for you. I'll try and keep it an hour. So I've got a couple more questions. What's it like to be famous?
Hey, that's a good question. Somebody asked me that the other day at a festival, and I said, God, I completely forgot what it was like to be famous because of the time we've kind of had off working in front of crowds and stuff, you know, who recognize you. I said to someone, God, it feels weird that people are recognizing me. This was at the weekend. because I completely forgot, living in this kind of, you know, bubble of lockdown, you kind of go, oh, I'm just me, you know, I'm not famous, no one knows who I am. And then you go out and people start shouting bogeys at you again, and you're like, oh right, yeah. I did all that again. Oh, we've got to start all that again, all that fame thing.
Do you like it, people shouting bogeys at you?
Actually, I don't mind it. Dom's not a massive fan.
Oh, it does mean that you've had an impact on their lives.
Yeah, well, exactly. Because some people have said to us, you know, do you think bogeys is kind of been a hindrance to your career? Because that's kind of what people, you know, pretty much everyone knows you for. We said, well, no, because without that, we wouldn't be Dick and Dom. We wouldn't be sitting here 25 years later, you know. So,
and we always said that when one of us is the first to cark it, it'll probably be trending number one, bogeys, hashtag bogeys.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah.
But actually, it was Rich, it was Bobby Ball, wasn't it? The late Bobby Ball, who gave you that a bit of advice about bogeys. And he said, but listen, lad, you've got a catchphrase. Some artists go there, or entertainers go years trying to get a catchphrase, and you've done it. Because, of course, he had Rock on Tommy, and everyone that walked past him went, hey, Rock on Tommy, and he would do the same back. So he said, it's great that we've got one.
Yeah, oh, I get... The two things I get everywhere I go is, why did you leave Soccer AM, and can you catwalk with me? Because I used to have to catwalk up and down. Well, I didn't have to, but I did. I catwalked up and down. And people want me to do that with them. And it's like, how many drinks I've had depends on how I do it. If I've had a couple of drinks, I'm like, yeah, come on then, let's do it. Let's catwalk. Come on.
It's like bogeys. It depends what situation you're in. If we've got like a few beers, we'll join in with them. But if you're just like, I don't know, in the supermarket, playing your own business, chilling out, someone screaming bogeys over the fish fingers, you get a bit like, oh, God.
It's made it more limiting in terms of what you can do with your life and where you can go. It's probably a good thing, to be honest. I think, you know, if you try and go to a busy pub or go out, you know, into town or something like that, it's generally quite hard.
Oh, my God. Do you remember that one time you were in Ibiza on your stag do, Dom? It was just me and Dom on a... We went just me and him on a stag do, on his stag do. And had it large in Ibiza. And we walked into this bar and started having a couple of beers. At the back, minding our own business. Then the whole bar clocked onto who we were. And there must have been...
The whole bar.
500 to 1,000 people, you know, Brits abroad, just screaming bogeys. I mean, it's like...
Then they all started going... Dick and Dom are in the pub. Dick and Dom are in the pub. Dick and Dom, Dick and Dom, Dick and Dom. And we were like, oh, God. But the good news is we got bought shots all night. So that was great.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
I was at a gig, an Oasis gig once in Elephant and Castle. And Liverpool, it was their brilliant time when they won the Champions League, where they were behind and they came back and won. Oasis, the atmosphere there was incredible. And they had that instead of a support band. Oasis came out to You Never Walk Alone. I remember that. And anyway, so we were on this little gantry bit up above sort of where the main crowd was, you know, sort of VIP bit or whatever. And we'd been watching the game with Noel and Liam and everyone out the back. And then everyone was really giddy. And I don't know, you probably don't know this because you were on TV at the same time, but we had wrestlers on our show and they used to shout, easy, easy. Yeah, yeah. And it went all the way to into football culture. I was, people used to do it all the time. And halfway through the gig, Liam Gallagher goes, Soccer Air boys, easy. Oh, yeah, no. They all turned around and started doing that at us in the crowd. And it was one of those moments where you're like, fucking, this is brilliant. Oh my fucking God. How do I bottle this? I feel amazing that I've actually got a reaction and I'm something important at a gig. You know, it's like, it was that incredible thing.
We had a less impressive, but still quite cool version of that. Once at a festival, and Happy Mondays were headlining the festival, and we'd been on earlier on in the day, Camp Festival, you know?
Yeah.
And they came on to headline, massive crowd, that was huge, all the way back to the castle. And they came on, say, Happy Mondays, right? They came on, and the first thing Bez said, was anyone seen fucking Dick and Dom? And that was a similar kind of like, actually, there are moments where it's okay to be famous, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good stuff. And I love the fact that we all still get excited about it. So whenever an old school footballer, like when Glenn Hoddle or Ray Wilkins especially, or Kevin Keegan, they whenever they've said hello to me, but whenever they, like, I remember Ray Wilkins going, All right, Tim. And I'm like, oh my God, he knows my name. He fucking knows my name. And it's just that thing where you go, Ray Wilkins knows my name. I can't believe it. It's that thing which is, you know, you can't get over that sort of feeling of what do you remember the feeling you got when you were first commissioned for a TV show? Do you still remember?
Yeah. It was one that me and Dom, we'd written the idea for it, hadn't we? It's like a bring it on. It was a Jobs for the Boys thing on Children's BBC. And I remember we got the call. We were in the car driving through Ealing, weren't we? We were in Ealing at the time. We actually stopped the car, opened the doors, got out and just kind of high-fived across the car, you know, just going, ah!
Yeah!
Yeah,
fantastic. We worked hard to get that. That was
all right, final question then. What is the meaning of life?
Big one.
Have you got a big answer?
Imagine if we have the answer to the meaning of life. I've actually worked it out.
Ben Miller did that the other day on, because you know he's a scientist. He did it on Sunday Brunch the other day. He went, I've been thinking about it and I've got some answers to life. And I went, stop, everyone, gather in. Ben Miller's got the meaning to life, the answer to life. What it was is what you throw out in the universe, you get back, was what he said. And there's a lot of truth in that. He's going to do this podcast soon, so I'll discuss it. But there's a lot of truth in that. I had a guy called James Doty on this podcast, and he's a brain surgeon. But he talks a lot about that meditation with empathy and then you get it back in droves. So, you know, always project onto the world what you want to get back yourself. So anyway, I'm stalling for time here whilst thinking about
it. What are you
asking me? I don't know.
Because you're actually more kind of methodical and thought-provoking than me. I'm irrational and mental, whereas you come up with better things. So it's over to you.
Nothing like being stitched up, is there?
Completely.
Well, it's got to do with...
Can I just interrupt you there? Yeah. I just interrupt you. Simon and I got an award once. Can't remember what it was, but not a BAFTA. I know that. And we're on stage, and they said, "And the winner is Sunday Brunch." And we went up. I really enjoyed doing this. I said, "I would really love to have a great speech, but I just don't have one." However, Simon does, and then just stepped away. But actually, he delivered. He did have a speech up. I think he'd been working on it.
He's good at that kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah, he always does that. I can't. Those things I don't like doing, though. He loves doing all that stuff. I don't like doing that. So.
Well, I actually don't like doing things. I don't like being interviewed. So I got really anxious before I came to do this today because I just don't like being asked questions.
Really?
I don't know why. It's like you've been put on the spot. Right, you've got to answer this.
That's why we don't do panel shows or anything like that.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Yeah.
Not really doing that kind of thing. Surely it's got to be something to do with being content and grateful. Gratitude is something to do with the meaning of life. Grateful for everything that you have. Just being kind surely has got something to do with the meaning of life or the important things in life.
How did they sum it up on the Python film?
Always look on the bright side.
Answer to the meaning of life is if you go on to Sunday Brunch and you're about to be interviewed by Tim Lovejoy during a cookery item, don't drink a quarter of a bottle of vodka backstage before you get interviewed. Well, it wasn't a quarter of a bottle, but your alcohol expert was backstage and he said, try a couple of these glasses of vodka. So I did. So I tried a few different types of vodka that it was offering me, but I totally forgot that A, it was the morning, and B, that it was vodka. And so by the time I came around to the interview with you, I could barely string a sentence together. It was awful. I then bumped into Simon in the pub in Liverpool, in Manchester, wasn't it? In a bar. I said, look, please tell Tim I said sorry, because I watched it back and I talked like an absolute arse. Maybe that's the meaning of life.
All right, your homework, you two, is go and find out what the meaning of life is.
We need to go and try and find out what the meaning of life is.
Listen, thank you so much for joining me today. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And what do you want to, is there anything you want to plug about your podcast or something?
Don't think so. I think, the reality is, and we talked about this before you hit the record button, we've got something really, really, really exciting that we are going to be announcing, but it has to be done by a press office and by the panel that have the license to this thing. And so there is going to be something, but we can't announce it on this podcast. But maybe we'll come on to Sunday brunch and talk about it when we are allowed. But it's really exciting and it will make a lot of people very happy.
Love to have you back on the show soon. Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Tim.